Welcome to Performance Day's Functional Fabric Fair podcast. You are listening to a technology presentation from November 2015. Ms. Angela Walters, Brand Manager of XRD Impact Protection Technologies, presents Innovative Protection in Apparel.
Good afternoon, everyone. Hello. We're going to get started here just a minute early. And first, thanks again for participating. My name is Angela Walters. I'm the brand manager for XRD Impact Protection. And today I'm going to talk a little bit about innovative protection in apparel. Before I get too far down the road, though, just a quick slide on what is XRD, who are we, and what we do. We're an impact protection technology that works with a variety of brand partners, both in active, outdoor, and lifestyle. And you can find our solutions in anything from protective gear all the way up to footwear and apparel. We're a division of Rogers Corporation, which is a 180-year-old technology expertise manufacturing and engineering company based out of the United States. And yes, I've heard the jokes that no one believes the U.S. is even 180 years old, but it is. We have the XRD Impact Institute. And basically what that is, it's our in-house design, testing, and research center where we work with our partners to bring out their new innovations. Little collage about me and my background. I've been working with Rogers for going on 7 years. It goes very quickly. And the team at the XRD and Impact Institute, basically we work with customers to help bring their protective solutions to market. I was initially based outside of Boston, where our headquarters were, and recently have moved to Annecy, France, where, as the shirt very nicely says, life's better in Annecy. I can tell you it is. The weather is so much better. I enjoy a variety of sports and activities, which makes it a great compliment when we're working with some customers and brand partners. I took this quick snapshot, obviously just on the other side of the wall here, but as you guys are aware, as you're walking the halls, there's line after line of tons of different great materials that are here, and they're all here to help you to design the best that you can, and they range in areas such as insulating to reflective to waterproofing, and you kind of get the idea that there's this ongoing theme of protection that's out there. You know, we need to protect ourselves to enjoy what we love to do. And I just want to take the next bit of time here to discuss what some consider the number one growing trend in sportswear, and that's impact protection. I took this snapshot from, we use an online tool that helps to monitor key phrasing and stories that are on through the web. They look up news articles, blogs, a variety of social channels. And the key takeaway from this word cloud is basically that when you think about impact protection, many people just focus really on the impact part. But what customers are looking for impact protection, what your end users, what your athletes are looking for when they want impact protection, is something that's flexible, something that's breathable, something that is lightweight, that has technology story behind it. And so it really makes this a complex issue on how can we talk about impact protection and also bring in a good design that encompasses all of these extra areas here. So before we get too far, I get about a half an hour, and I'm hoping that the half an hour is full of great tips for you and best practices that you can take away with. But if I can do three things, I'll be happy. So keep these in mind as you're going through. First off, I want you to be able to find some tools in this presentation and talk that helps you find this great mix of aesthetics, technology incorporation, and functionality. Next, I'm going to share with you a process that we use with our customers. And even if you're not designing in protective solutions, we see this process also work well with other areas within fabrics or other design challenges. And last but not least, certainly, I hope you walk away with some of these tools and benchmarking areas that you can use to gain success. Okay, so as I mentioned, as an ingredient brand for the impact protection market, We're able to service customers in a wide range of not only markets, but also applications. And this can span from motorcycle protection to mountain biking. It can be in team sports. So we just finished up World Cup for rugby, all the way down to even activities for children. And no matter what we see in all of those markets, there's always a similar phrase here. There's a challenge that you as designers and product developers need to work with. And that is your challenge to create new products that design both with aesthetics. That's the obvious one. We need things to look good for people to buy them. Functionality. And then we like to think that technology incorporation, when used properly, can really help to bridge these two sides on aesthetics and functionality. So when those work well, we get what we'll call here this complete solution. Yeah. So I see some nodding heads. So I understand that this is not new. But it amazes us when we look into the market of impact protection, we continually see this missed. So what may seem pretty intuitive to everyone sitting here, yeah, Angie, you know, we need aesthetics, functionality, technology, makes a good product. It's being missed left and right in the impact protection phrase. What we are faced with then are products that look like this. I hope when I'm 100 years old and need this for hip protection that I don't have this. Or we have products that look like this. I played ice hockey growing up. I wore something like this for ice hockey. This is marketed for skiers, snowboarders, and mountain biking, not ice hockey. And we laugh, too, as being a technology company, when we're looking at all of these new technologies that we have and how we can incorporate designs, and we're thinking, well, why not just do this? Because the bubble guys still have all of these, that provides some good protection. There may be some technology, and they're not quite, but you know, they're certainly missing some things there. So in order for our customers not to go down this route, what we've put together is a process that incorporates four steps to help you achieve these combinations. It starts with research. Next is design, the prototyping, and then testing. So this all looks good and well on the slide. We like to put things through to some practice. We're going to work through an example to show you how this can work in real life for your applications. Since we're approaching ski season, we picked snowboarding knee pads, and to narrow the market even more, we're focusing on women. So women's snowboarding knee pads. Now, even if you're not designing protective knee pads for snowboarding, keep thinking through this process and how you can look to use some of these tools in your current designs. It's a little bit of background history. I mentioned that I lived for a while in New England, which is the northeast corner of the United States. Has anyone ever been there during the wintertime? Maybe skied? No? Okay. So I'll give you a little hint. The winters in New England are very harsh. Last year, remember, you might have seen some of the news stories with the huge piles of snow in Boston. They had so much snow, they couldn't even get rid of it out of town. This is an advantage in one sense, because I have many colleagues who are skiing today. Like literally this weekend, they're out skiing. But they get things that look like this. I'm sorry, this is a really dark picture. But basically what we're trying to show is that we fondly call this the white ribbon of death, because if you get outside of the slope, then you really only have grass and other areas to go to. And then people are so excited to get out there that you have just a little bit of snow and lines at the queue there. And it's like 30 minutes just to go down a run that's 5. But people are enthusiastic. And then as the season goes on, the snow packs down, and if we don't get any new snow, what we can end up is ice skiing. So why this long diatribe? Mainly what I'm trying to say is that snowboarding in New England is areas can be quite difficult for many people. And especially for this girl. And basically what she's showing, this is one of my friends actually, and she sent this picture to me, and it was her first day snowboarding, and she had bruises all over her knees. And I thought to myself, well, why? Like, she knows what I do for a living. Why doesn't she just call me? And then as we're developing this presentation, I did what any consumer might do. I went online to get an initial overview. And I was a little discouraged when I saw these are your options right now for snowboarding knee pads. You can imagine that, A, they're not women-specific, because right now in our example we're using women's, but they're also multi-use. And they're also being marketed for mountain biking, skating, and snowboarding. Now, it's kind of whatever season that you're in. the purpose of this is not to downgrade any of these brands by any means, but we do see an opportunity for improvement. So we're going to go ahead and put our research, design, prototyping, and testing into this and how we might improve on some of these next stages. We start with research. Research can go in a wide number of areas. I'll focus on three, though. Some areas for research are athlete interviews. I'm sure many of you are doing this right now, and I'll just share with you a few of our findings. Epidemiology, fun area for lots of people. And then also, when you're researching, you as designers and developers also will be researching different impact technologies out there. So I'll give you some tools to ask and questions that you can use there. So first, on our athlete interviews, we have been working on some new projects to really connect more, not only to connect through with our brand partners to the end athletes. And in last winter, we had the opportunity to interview some snowboarding athletes, what we will call elite athletes. Elite meaning they're not your professionals, but they're not your weekend warrior, as we say, but they're more of people who are consistently involved in the sport. And we did these interviews both in Northeast U.S., Midwest U.S., Colorado area, and then in France, where we were able to get a big group of different people from Western Europe. And it was pretty across the board what people were looking for. A, they wanted flexible, non-restrictive. And when I remember in particular, I was helping do some of these interviews, and I was interviewing a woman who I asked the question, can you describe your experience when you wear protective gear in snowboarding, knee pads, elbow pads? And she paused for a second, and she just went, ugh. Like, she couldn't even fathom a word that described it. It was just so awful. You could feel the pain in her face about that. She says, I can't do anything with them. She says she looked everywhere. She had tried a few, and she just throws them out. And if she gets injured, she says, well, I know better, but I can't do anything with these. Next is size and fit. Another woman had described that, for example, it's common to have universal or unisex sizing. And she had admitted that she buys children's. She buys children's pads, and she prefers the ones with the flexible sleeve-like versus the attachment pads on there. And then we go down through the list, and obviously lightweight is across the board, no matter what industry you're in our markets now. Thin and low profile, similar, and durable protection. And we kind of gauged that down to they were looking for a product to last at least one season. So that gave us a bit of some nice background info. On the marketing side, this is also really great info that you can take to your teams as well, because we find some nice cues on how we can connect with customers on an end stage after we've designed our product. For example, we call it a how it works story. For XRD, for example, we talk about a story that's soft and flexible at rest, and then it firms on impact. There's a few others that are similar, but they like to know how that story goes. And then there's a few others here. I think one that we'll touch on a little bit is that there is a perception that hard shell products are perceived as more protective than soft shell. So keep that in mind. We'll address that one just a little bit later. Okay, epidemiology. It's kind of a fun word to say. In general, it's basically the study of patterns, causes, and effects. Now, when we do epidemiology research for impact protection, what we're taking a look at here are three things. You need to find the where are they being impacted, why, and what can you do about it, or how can you help. Now, this slide here will give you a few areas that we find when we're thinking about our protection for women, a few areas of differentiation that you can take home with you and use. For our knee pad protection example, I'll give you this example. So it's pretty well known that women's hips are more widely set than men's. What also causes, and what we also see for ski boots and things, is that puts a lot of pressure on the knees. Now, if you take that type of research about the body, and then you combine that with a fact, for example, that in snowboarding, the leading leg, meaning the downhill leg, is typically the one that gets injured more frequently. And that's because it's leading forward. So you combine the fact that women have broader set hips, so more fragile knees, and oh yeah, and it's going to be the leading leg one. So when you're thinking about designing of those areas, there could be two couple of takeaways that you want to go there. Maybe you do different protection on the outside. Maybe you make a left one and a right one. Maybe you only need to sell one. So when you're going through, this is how areas on some of these research areas can really help you when you're kind of deciding on what products to design. Last but not least, as I mentioned, there's a wide range of protective companies there, and we want to give you some tips on how can you sort through the crowd of them. First off, research the range of protection solutions. For example, the type of solution that you will need is much different if you are designing something that requires a low speed of impact versus a high speed of impact. I'll give you an example. Skating, like rollerblading, is much different than downhill mountain biking in the sense of how the rate of speed that you're going. And that rate of speed also means that you need a different impact solution. Some companies tend to take a one-size-fits-all. It doesn't work for impact. So keep that in mind. Standard versus custom designs. So many companies offer a great range of standards, but other ones are willing to work with you on your custom design solutions. That can be really interesting. There are some things that you'll need to do, and we'll address those in the prototyping and testing phase, but that could be of interest. Material flexibility. And then again, this is going back to your design criteria, what you've learned in research, taking a look at flexible materials versus non-flexible. And then there's a whole host here, you know, fit and sizing, attachment options. Some are pocketed, some are adhesive, some are sewn on. There's a variety of ways that you can incorporate those. Wash standards and wear durability. The last point here, and I think that this one is... sure that anyone in this room who's exhibiting now will say, is that think of your technology partners. When you choose your technology partners, make sure you choose a partner that you can leverage. And what do I mean by that? Choose a partner that will really help you accomplish your goals and your designs. There are many of us that have internal testing and labs that want to do design work. There are many that have external sales support. But make sure when you're choosing a partner, choose one that will really help you get success that's there. Okay, so now we have, when you look at this list, I just want to take two more minutes to talk about one that we're seeing a trend. And we saw this in the interviews. Remember back when we were doing the female athlete interviews? They had talked about that hard shell materials are greater impact protection, offer greater impact protection than soft flexible materials. And I want to talk about that just for a little bit so that we can try to demyth this exercise. When we have customers that come to us, we think of this story, and you're probably thinking, well, why the turtles? What is this turtles? And I'm going to tell you a story that goes back 50 plus million years ago. So 50 plus million years ago, there was this kind of epic, you know, world championship, you know, battle going on. You had the dinosaurs on one side, and they had this very old school type of strategy. They were big, they had hard shells, you know, they were bulky, but they were pretty massive and kind of, you know, intimidating. And then you had on the other side us mammals. You know, so we have our soft shell, but we're agile and we're flexible and we run faster and we can outmove and get around all the dinosaurs. So I think you know how the story ends on who kind of prevailed at the end of the day. When we think about soft shell protection, think in mind the dinosaurs, because we really see this transition happening from hard shell protection over to soft shell. So when you're at your in France, there's Decathlon and Sport 2000. I'm not too sure in Germany. But when you're looking online or at your local store, this same play out is going on. Customers have a choice. They have old style, hard shell, inflexible, bulky, and uncomfortable protection. They're comfortable with it right now in the mind, not physically on their bodies. They know how that works. On the other side here, we have soft, flexible, comfortable protection that, at the end of the day, will give them their agility. It'll give them their comfort. But there's this learning curve that we're definitely working through at this stage. And as materials scientists and as we work with our brand partners, we're working through to educate more and more on how this can happen. So it's a little bit about kind of these stages on what's going on. for those of you who are still in disbelief and say, yes, that's just a story, we still need hard shell protection. Remember, I've got a lot of engineers on my team. So here's your data that you can take home with you. And basically, what the data is showing, so we did a little internal test here. And what we were measuring is transmitted pounds of force. Now, when you're looking at transmitted pounds of force, the lower the number, the better. So look down on this side of the graph. And what we did is we took three different types of materials, a general EVA, which is commonly used in protective equipment today. Many of those knee pads and those shorts that I had showed you before were using a general EVA. And then we took two of the XRD materials, a 9 PCF and a 15 PCF. And then we impacted them foam only, and then down the line with a variety of other outer shell materials. Some of these are outer shell materials that you will find today in sportswear. And just for fun, we threw in steel, just to kind of make it from one end to the other. Long story short, as you look through this data, what we're showing here is that, yes, a hard shell, outer shell, makes a bad impact foam look good. So if you're insistent on using a bad impact foam, please do add a hard shell on it. You need it. But if you want flexibility, if you want comfort, just go with a much better impact foam and get rid of the hard shell because you don't need it. You can see here that only foam on the 15 PCF is very close to the no rating of steel. So as you're going through and you're looking at varying degrees of impact protection, just take a look at those. We have our research gathered. Next stage, design. Now, you guys are certainly the experts in this design area, and I'm not going to teach you anything about that. But what I want to talk to you about a little bit is that now that we're decided on going to use soft shell material, and I'm hoping you are because we're not staying back in the Stone Age, we're moving forward, is I want to give you some design tips on how you can incorporate flexible materials into your designs and what to look for when you're making these design changes. So first step, we call this focus on the flex lines. And by flex lines, what I'm talking about are the grooved hinges going through the pads. In this example, we have both vertical and horizontal flex lines. So those are what I mean when we say about flex lines. So first tip, we have two tips for you to keep in mind. And yes, back to the engineers. They required me to put a formula in here for you. So think thin to win. And what I mean by thin to win is that when you look at F, meaning the force required to flex on your hinges versus thickness, the force required to flex is proportionate to the cube of the thickness. All right, I'm more visual, so I need this. Okay, this is much better for me. So what this means is that even though this pad is quite thick, but it really has great, we call these valleys, great valleys, and the foam line goes almost down to the fabric side. To give you an example, if you can change your designs from 1 centimeter, that hinging, 1 centimeter to 1 millimeter, the difference in force required to flex is 1,000 times difference. So it really makes a huge difference when you're looking at designing and flexing there. So keep that in mind. Second tip out of when you're looking at focus on flex lines, flex with the body and make sure they're the length of the pad. Again, I know this probably seems intuitive, but we see it go wrong all the time. I'll give you an example. This is a pad that's pretty widely known on the market, and it has number one is wrong too. The flex lines are not thin. If anything, they're thick. And then also, they are not designed for optimum movement, meaning that they're curved. And so they're not flexing with the body. Whereas this one has very thin flex lines, and then also the flexings are going the length of the pad and in the direction the body moves. Does that make sense? So flex the thin, and good. Okay. This is a fun one, and this is one where material suppliers and us from the impact side, we need your help too. So I'm hoping we can talk more about how we can incorporate these. So we all know that certainly design is great for aesthetic values, but there's also a way that you can incorporate great design features to affect your not only the level of impact protection, but the overall performance of your impact protection. So I'll give you a couple examples here and just a walkthrough. This one is what we call a delta pattern. And the delta pattern is pretty good about, first off, does everyone know tessellation, the phrase tessellation? Basically, it's just repeated patterns that don't have any overlap or any voids in them. The most common one today is the hex. Kind of wish it would go away, but they're everywhere. So the honeycomb, you see them in nature all over. But those are tessellation patterns. So anyways, so this delta tessellation pattern can be used for, we'll take an example. On the top of the hand, if you were needed to protect against a blunt object, whether that's a branch or a ball or something that's going to be a blunt force, the delta pattern can be a really great solution because the triangular shape can actually spread out the force amongst the triangle, but since you're missing the void, it's much lighter weight. And in areas like hands, where you know they're a little bit more sensitive to weights than if you had like a hip pad, it's kind of a great benefit to have in those. So that's one example. The other ones, cones are kind of fun. So cones, shoulder pad is made up of cones. So cones going up like this. The cone pattern can be used for both helping against low speeds and high speeds impacts. So what I mean is that you can, when you have a low speed impact, it's activating just the tip of the cone. When you have a high speed impact, it's activating the entire foam. See here another one. And then just another design over here, the teardrop ones that's over on the thigh pattern, that can be an interesting pattern when you have to get in a tight space because it has a little corner. Okay, but let's take this another step. So you can use tessellation patterns and then go back to our epidemiology research. This is fun. We can connect the two. So what we're doing here is that you can take a tessellated pattern and then combine it with epidemiology research. And what we did is that we created a series of multiple shapes with different sizing. Think of this as a modular system that you can use. So on your body, you have some areas that are pretty flexible, my wrist. And other areas, like my forearm, that isn't flexible. At least I hope it never will be someday. And in between there, you've got all these other little moving parts. So what we did is we can take a nice tessellated pattern, whether that's like pentas, hexas. We have an interesting one here called Starry Night and things like that. But the idea is that you use the larger parts for women. The epidemiology showed that for women, a larger part on a part that doesn't move is about 100 meters in diameter. And then you can add in the medium-sized parts around the joints. That's about 50 millimeters in diameter. And you can patter those in then with fillers. And the fillers are 10 millimeters in diameter. So again, you kind of have this modular system, but you have a guide in mind based off of the research that you did earlier on how you can mix and match and design different patterns there. So this is what we mean when we talk about, you know, using design to actually talk about that protection story and how you can achieve greater things there. Type that actually is going to be able to work well. You can put it on yourself and use it for the next stage testing. I show you these three things because they're connected. Anyone see a connection on this? There's a theme here. Okay, I'll give you a hint. The theme is that no matter if you're doing this in-house or you're working with another manufacturing partner or a technology partner, there's three things that are important around when you are prototyping. One is that they're fast, meaning you're not shipping something to China. 2 weeks later, you get your first prototype back. This is something you can do quickly. And as we said, fast iterations is really important. Easy to change. Again, every time you go back and forth, you're losing time there. You're losing energy around the product or around the project. So something that's easy to change. And the third one, and I'm sure everyone can appreciate this, especially today, these are all really low cost. They're not fancy. They're very low cost, but they are efficient. And that's what you're looking for in a great prototyping tool and a method that when you're designing those and what you want to do. So keep those in mind when you're doing some prototyping in-house. Something that's fast, something that can be changed quickly, and something that's low cost will be great tips. Next, testing. And I put a little smile because we do a lot of testing in-house, and it's kind of fun. We like to break things. It ends up with being fun demos and things, not breaking body parts by any means, but other things. So on the testing range, just again, we're going to touch on a couple of best practices for you to take away with. And the first one is, remember I mentioned there's kind of this difference on standard parts and custom designs. And we're excited when customers want to do custom designs, but you got to start now. And there's two phases of testing. There's obviously the lab testing, but then there's also these in-use testing. You want to test things on your athletes. It's another good reason on why if you have good prototypes, you can use those prototypes for this initial rounds of testing. For testing, especially in Europe, testing can be important for protective apparel and gear because there's the EN standards. You need something CE certified. In the U.S., it's a little different. I think maybe because everybody likes to sue each other later. I don't know. But there's not as many testing standards as there are. So depending on where you're designing, where the products are shipped, you need to know those. Canada has their own standards than here. So you have to have those in mind when you have those design testings. So obviously if there's a standard, test to the standard. If there is no standard, you can always go to competitive products. It's kind of a good area to look at. Or go back to that design criteria. What did you hear from your research stage? Where do you need to be on all of these testing areas? The same also applies to your end-use testing. We found that, you know, flex moves with the body is low profile. All of those were important, so you get those from your end-use testings. And additionally, and yes, I work on brand management. These create really also good marketing stories that you get at in the forefront and you can share with the rest of your team. I'll give you an example. In the work industry, there are a lot of work boots, like in oil and mining and area. I know this is a little bit out of category, but bear with me. There's many standards for what they call metatarsal protections. And metatarsal is basically, typically have been seen a big chunky steel composite that's on the top of the foot that protects the metatarsal. Since the standard's been around, this has been a hard shell, outer shell. We had worked with a customer in the U.S. To develop one of the very first internal metatarsal guards made with a flexible foam. What that meant was that we could put the protection not on the outside, where everyone could see it and it inhibited the flex of the boot, but instead on the inside, in the inside of the tongue. So it was nice and lightweight, you could flex the boot, looked pretty good. We sent it to Satra for one of the first rounds of testing. For those who don't know, Satra is in the U.K. and they test a wide range of sports. And Satra called us up and said, so you guys sent this boot and looks good, but aren't we doing metatarsal protection testing? I said, yeah. They're like, well, you forgot the metatarsal guard. And we're like, no. It's in there. It really is. Just test the boot. And at the end of the day, ended up passing. So that was like, check off the box. We wanted invisible protection, something that was really new and revolutionary. And for the testing lab to come back and question, did we include the impact protection? That seemed like a good fit for us. Okay, so just to give you just a couple of slides here on how we tested our prototype knee protection we're doing just for you guys. We put it on the KDEX machine. KDEX is an instrument rating, can do a wide variety of impact testing. Didn't have much snow 2 weeks ago when we did this, so we took it into a gym and had one of our local athletes do a couple of jumps and flexes, things that might be resembled in snowboarding. Granted, the lunging might be more like teleskiing, but anyways, you get the point on different ways that you can take a look and actually use this prototype for an example. So I have a video just to show you a little bit more around that. So just to wrap it up, you know, so this was the prototype. This is the example that we put together to showcase for you guys to go through this process. We started out with research, finding a lot of great, interesting things from the research that we did with our athletes. We talked about epidemiology and how the flexing goes. That's where we got to some of these shapes. We went into design work. We kind of went into some of these penta and hexa areas so we can combine those for the knee protection. This is a result of the prototyping that we did. Oh, you can just start it there. It's okay. And then finally, you're kind of seeing the testing in work. You know, this is a flexible part. It's not a finished part, but it gives you an idea on where things would flex and where we want to design in hinges, if there's a pool someplace, and we can go back and update those. You can see we have a competitive pad on the left there, and the gain of, I think we've certainly have accomplished some of those design criteria on something that is thinner, more flexible, lighter weight, but still maintains those impact protections that we went through. All right, just have one more. I want to thank you guys for listening, and I hope, I just wanted to touch real quickly back to our goals today. I hope that you were able to take away some ideas on how you can incorporate the mix of design technology, aesthetics, and functionality into those. I hope you can use this process with your teams or with your other partners, and some of those best practices there for your key success. But if you have questions, I'll be here, and thanks for listening. Okay.
Thank you for listening to Performance Day's Functional Fabric Fair podcast. To get your free ticket for the next fair or listen to other presentations, go to www.performancedays.eu. Copyright 2015 by Design and Development GmbH Textile Consult. All rights are reserved. Thank you for listening to Performance Day's Functional Fabric Fair podcast. To get your free ticket for the next fair or listen to other presentations, go to www.performancedays.eu. Copyright 2015 by Design and Development GmbH Textile Consult. All rights are reserved.